There's a few things that really are powering China. Number one, we have to remember that China leads the world in STEM graduates. So science, yes. Technology, engineering, and mathematics.
We lead the world in woke graduates, though.
Yeah, we do.
We're number one in woke.
We definitely do. We lead the world in people that don't know how to define a woman. That's exactly what the United States is.
That's right. We're number one. Yeah.
When you ask that question, why is China advancing so much in AI? All of this is related to that, right? It's the goals of the government. It's the education system. It's the dedication from the kids.
Welcome back to today's interview with Cyrus Jansen here. This is part two of my conversation with Cyrus Jansen, who has a very popular YouTube channel. We'll talk about that coming up. You're watching brightvideos.com, and if you missed part one of this interview, you can find it also on this platform. I'm Mike Adams, and the reason I invited Cyrus on is because I speak conversational Chinese. I used to live in Taiwan. I'm so intrigued about China and its innovation, and I'm a huge fan of China's open source AI models, most recently DeepSeek version 4, which is really equivalent to the highest end frontier models of US companies like OpenAI and Google. And yet China is giving these models away for free, open source. You can run them locally at no cost, or you can use their API and they charge you almost nothing. It's crazy. You can code all day now for like $1.50. It's unreal. So welcome, Cyrus, back to part two of this interview. As you can tell, I want to talk about AI right now and sort of China's stance on AI. So to what do you attribute China's just real acceleration in the pioneering of AI advances?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. And thanks again for having me back on the show. It's a pleasure to chat with you as always. And, you know, I think what's amazing with the AI race, you know, we always hear this, you know, the huge AI race between the United States and China. There's a few things that really are powering China. Number one, we have to remember that China leads the world in STEM graduates. So science, yes. Technology, engineering, and mathematics, it's about a 10-to-1 ratio, you know, from what China is able to produce on a yearly basis.
We lead the world in woke graduates, though.
Yeah, we do.
We're number one in woke.
We definitely do. We lead the world in people that don't know how to define a woman. That's exactly what the United States is.
We're number one. Yeah,
we're number one in that, but hands down. And what's funny is you know, if you ask that question anywhere in China, you would just get looked at like if you had two heads. Because it's like, you don't know what a woman is? Pretty obvious what a woman is. Right. But yet that's where we are here in 2026. But going back to the question here, there's a tremendous amount of planning that's done by China. And this is something that I often like to talk about China, because I think, you know, there's several things that the government does that are very efficient and very interesting. One is that every 5 years, the Chinese government comes out with a five-year plan. Currently, right now, China is in its 14th consecutive five-year plan. This is actually really an amazing thing about life in China, because what happens is when this new goal comes out, it gives the entire country a very interesting, you know, insight into where the country is going to be going. You know, what is the national priorities for China? Where do they want to go? What do they want to accomplish? I go back to the last five-year plan. One of the most interesting goals that they set is they said, you know, we would like to actually increase the life expectancy of our citizens by 1 year. And that's an amazing goal, right? When you think about that, think about the government saying, we want to make sure that our people are living longer. Well, how do they do that? Well, we want to make sure that we're improving the air quality here in China. And so what you've seen is, you know, and again, I've been in China since 2007, where, again, I mean, some of the days there with the pollution were unbelievable. I've been in polluted days in Shanghai where, you know, you are 100 meters from the traffic light and you cannot see whether that traffic light is green or red because of how thick the pollution was.
Whoa.
It was very, very crazy back, you know, 20 years ago. And of course, you know, then China hosted the Beijing Olympics in 2008. They really started to clean things up. Shanghai hosted the World Expo in 2010. And there's been a huge shift where they said, look, you know, we can't have this kind of quality of this air quality, you know, because it's obviously taking years off of our citizens' lives. You know, yes. We want to improve that. That's a big part of that. And so they did, you know, they took systematic steps to reduce the air pollution, you know, change how factories are building, you know, change the different types of electricity. So for example, 20 years ago, every single car on the road was gas, and it was a tremendous auto industry in China. Obviously, a lot of cars on the road, you know, contributes to a tremendous amount of smog and, you know, pollution. Well, now China is 60% electric vehicles. So 60% of cars on the road is electric. That has, you know, improved the quality of life in these major cities tremendously. You now go to the bigger cities like Shanghai, Beijing. I mean, it's remarkable how clean the streets are, how much less smog is there, how efficient things are going. So again, you know, going back to these five-year plans is amazing. But, you know, what's coming up right now in this next five-year plan is AI. AI is pretty much goal number one, saying that we're going to invest a lot into this. And there's also a strategic advantage because, you know, when you're looking at AI and you're kind of training these large language models, the learning language models, you know, you need a tremendous amount of data. And that's what China has, right? When you have more people inputting, you have more data, it's able to actually, you're actually able to develop that skill a lot faster and the AI is able to become more advanced. And this is exactly what we saw, for example, when you look at TikTok. You know, how did TikTok rise so fast? And why is that algorithm so good? You know, why is it so good? But because in China, they were able to really have so much more pieces of content funneling through that algorithm that they were actually able to develop a very curated algorithm that really just gave you the type of content that you really want to see. And so, you know, it was just able to actually produce an algorithm that was much more superior than your Instagram or Facebook. And this is why when they brought TikTok to the United States, it immediately, you know, became so popular here, you know, and it became much more popular than Facebook, for example, or, you know, even Instagram. And, you know, even now today in the United States, you know, if you're under the age of 30, you know, TikTok is, you know, very, very popular. And so, again, I think what you're seeing is, you know, Mike, is you're seeing a tremendous amount of investment. You're seeing, really China realizing that the future is AI. But what's amazing is again, we had talked about this before. In the United States, everything is about, you know, monetizing, trying to make it as profitable as possible. Whereas China says, hey, guess what? We just built something called DeepSeek. It's completely open source. It's open to anybody. And we've developed it for a few million dollars, as opposed to OpenAI, who charges, you know, money every month for it to use. And, it costs, I don't know, hundreds of billions of dollars, what they've invested in that. And even Sam Altman has said, to the point where, you know, we think that our model is going to be so important for the future of the American economy, but we don't know if we're ever going to reach to the point where we're actually profitable. So we might need a bailout from the government. You know, he basically had alluded to the fact that OpenAI is going to need a government bailout and that the U.S. government should bail it out because that's what's needed inside America. So it's kind of interesting. Like you had mentioned, you know, you can code with DeepSeek, you know, you can do all these fun things on these Chinese platforms. And it really is pushing the bounds of, you know, innovation. But that's something that we see China constantly doing, not just in AI, but many, many different industries.
I've been doing a lot of coding with DeepSeek over the last few days since it was released. And it's extraordinary. It's really extraordinary. But here's the thing. In the Chinese education system, my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's largely a meritocracy. You earn your way into the college degree or the college acceptance. You earn your way even into the earlier schools. And of course, you know, the Chinese moms, there's kind of a famous archetype of like, study, study, study. You know, like the Chinese parents are really intense with their kids to study. Correct. But the result of that is that, you know, in America, for example, University of California, San Diego, there's a very large percentage of incoming university freshmen who are mathematically illiterate, and they have to go through remedial seventh grade math. That would be unthinkable in China. Even what we call seventh grade math is probably like fourth grade math in China. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the result is, there is a question in this, so thank you for your patience, but the result is that there's a narrative in America that the only way that DeepSeek and Qwen and Alibaba, the only way that those models are any good is because they stole everything from us. You know, that's the narrative. We hear it every day. It's in the media, it's in the conferences. And yet when I look at where are the science papers being authored about AI technology, it's all coming out of China. DeepSeek, manifold constrained hyperconnections for the pre-training. Sparse attention mechanisms coming out also of DeepSeek. And I think the CEO, his name, he's a co-author on the science papers. Like, these are builders, these are scientists, these are engineers. They are freaking brilliant, and they actually earned their way into those positions. They weren't handed a college degree because they have the right skin color or they're lesbians or they're LGBT or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So what are your comments about all of that, that like the meritocracy education system and how it actually leads to people being good at innovation?
Well, actually, you know, the word meritocracy is so vital to understanding how China actually functions, today, because we see that also in the government level. And that's a very interesting point as well. Whereas, again, we have this misconception in the United States where, oh, you know, it's one man. Xi Jinping is in charge of everything and he rules with an iron fist and it's whatever he wants to say and whatever he wants to do. Actually, it's not. You know, China is built on a system of meritocracy. And the only way for you to advance is by, you know, doing good in a smaller job and then getting a promotion to a bigger job. And so when you actually look at Xi Jinping, for example, in the government, his father was a high ranking communist government official. His father had close connections to Chairman Mao. So he was a very high ranking general. But when Xi Jinping entered into the party, he started at the bottom. And he worked his way all the way up. It took him 37 years to go from the point when he entered into becoming the president of China. Now, if you actually look at what he's accomplished in his career, he had a very established career, you know, where he was actually managing different provinces. You know, one of the biggest provinces that he managed was the Fujian province, which is very close to Taiwan. So actually, yeah. Xi Jinping was very vital in actually improving the relations between Taiwan and China, but most importantly, improving trade. So there's a tremendous amount of trade, you know, a lot of business deals between mainland and Taiwan. And so again, you know, because of his, you know, performance, he was able to advance and then be able to become the party secretary in Shanghai, which was his last posting before he then was, admitted into the top level. There's a board of about nine members the Politburo. So the Politburo is nine members at the top. And so from that Politburo is then selected the president. And so he had a very long, you know, a nearly four decade march, you know, of going from the bottom all the way to the top. But again, that was based on meritocracy.
But if he had completely screwed up the economy of the Fujian province, then he would have been fired from that job and never been allowed to move up, correct?
100%. Yeah. I mean, and that's what we see is a lot of, government leaders are able to achieve success on a, smaller level, because maybe you're managing a city. Okay, great. You've done a good job managing the city and we're now going to put you in charge of the province. Okay, great. You did a good job at the provincial level. Now we're going to put you in charge of a region. So now you're managing three different provinces. And yeah, so let's say that you weren't able to do well managing those three provinces and there was some corruption going on or there was some, a huge loss of revenue and the tax revenue wasn't good or, whatever reason, with something went wrong, you would not be able to get promoted. And so there's a different system. Whereas, in the United States, we know that our political system is essentially a popularity contest, right? This is how someone like Donald Trump, who has no political experience, came in and, he was a very good marketer, right? He's a very good public speaker. He knows how to talk to people and he knows how to corral, the middle America around him and say, look, we're going to make America great again, right? I want to make America great again. People thought, oh, okay, that's cool. Like that sounds like a great plan. Let's make it great again, And so that, that simple marketing slogan was able to, take him from essentially a private businessman all the way to the White House and be able to dominate.
Similarly, the fact that then Trump brings in people like Pete Hegseth to be the Secretary of Defense, who has literally no such experience at that level managing any large group. I mean, he was a Fox News host.
Yeah.
It seems to me like that also would be utterly unthinkable in China. You wouldn't take a TV host and put them in charge of the entire Chinese military.
No, you certainly wouldn't.
And that's crazy.
The other thing, it is crazy. And that's crazy that's how the United States is running. But as soon as win the election, you get to appoint whoever you want in whatever positions you want. So all of a sudden, like the Secretary of Defense, well, it's going to be my boy Pete, because he's loyal to Trump and, he's going to follow orders from Trump. Not that he's qualified for that. And so there's a big difference there. And kind of bringing it back to your original question, talking about with students and things like that, you might have heard of the Gaokao, which is the, the college entrance examination. This is the single most important, test that a Chinese student takes in their life.
Yeah.
It's a very big deal for them. I think it's a 2 or 3 day exam. It's a very, very extensive exam. And it basically determines if you're eligible to go to college or not. So, you're basically prepping for that and you're trying your hardest. And like you said, it's a system of meritocracy. You don't do well in the Gaokao, you don't have a pathway to getting into a university. Not like daddy's going to can just cut a check somewhere and say, hey, I want you to go to that university. I will write a check for however much it costs and you get into there because, I can be a donor to the university. That's exactly how the system works in the United States, right? It's about your connections, your guanxi, as we say in Chinese, or whatever you can do. And so I think that's also an interesting element as well, because I often get a lot of people saying, well, if China's so good, why do rich people leave China and move to the United States? And I said, no, that's actually a really good question, because the simple reality is that if you have a lot of money, you can influence the system here in America, right? I can go to the, you know, I can buy a house in the best neighborhood. I can send my kids to the most elite school. I can, you know, get private tutoring. I can basically fast track my children's success because I have money and I can influence things here in the United States. You can't always do that in China, right? It's different because China is much more of a socialist community where they say, look, you know, there you shouldn't have these advantages just because you have money, right? We want a society where the tide rises all boats. And so again, you have that system of meritocracy. And one thing, kind of going back to the government, I want people to understand this, is that most of these government officials are extremely educated, right? They have a basically, true, yeah, it's engineers and scientists that are running the government in China. And I mean, how many engineers or scientists do we have in the United States government?
We have lawyers run everything.
We have lawyers, right? Yeah. So that's the difference. We have lawyers running our government. They have engineers and scientists who are bilingual. And I've had a chance to meet many of these government officials over the years. And it's incredible because I've met guys like, oh yeah, Cyrus, I used to be an engineer in Germany. Oh, great. So you speak fluent German. Absolutely. Right. In addition to doing, you know, another doctorate degree in California, where I also earned this degree and speak perfect English. And so, you know, you can meet people that are, you know, basically, you know, like local government officials that all of a sudden it's like, wow, you speak three or four languages fluently. You have these advanced degrees. You're a very educated man. You're very smart, very intelligent. And that's a huge difference. And so again, like you mentioned, you know, in Chinese society, obviously school is prioritized, you know, getting good grades, working hard, putting in that effort. I mean, this is all a backbone of Chinese society and why, you know, quite frankly, there's a lot of pressure on young children in China. I think that, you know, it's a very rigorous school system. It's you know, one that is intense. I mean, just the amount of hours of homework that they have every day. And that's one thing, you know, when I brought my children back to China last summer, I remember meeting some kids that were very similar ages, and they asked us, it's like, how much homework do you have in America? And my daughter has maybe 10, 15 minutes a day. And they're like, 15 minutes a day?
Yeah, that's
like, I mean, that's nothing, yeah. I mean, they're 3 hours a day minimum. And so, you know, and we say, you know, and but, you know, their parents are like, hey, we get it. Like in America, you guys kind of allow them to, you know, kind of be happy and just kind of, you know, live a, you know, do some sport, kind of have fun with their friends. You know, there's a little bit less emphasis on the school as opposed to more living like a little bit normal childhood. You know, and I think like with Chinese kids, it's like, well, you know, we have a country of 1.4 billion people, you know, we need to work hard so that we can stand out and try to get the best success that we can in life. So again, it's just different cultures. It's just different things. But yeah, when you ask that question, why is China advancing so much in AI? All of this is related to that, right? It's the goals of the government. It's the education system. It's the dedication from the kids. It's the amount of STEM graduates that they're producing. It's the fact that they have a tremendous amount more data that they can test things a lot faster. I know, for example, that you're very fascinated with robots. There was an amazing report that came out that said, why is China so advanced in robots? Well, it's the ability because they can fail faster than anybody else, right? When they make that first prototype of a robot, it's going to fail, right? And then the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth. Well, because they can generate so many prototypes, you know, by the time they're on the 30th, you know, prototype, they got it pretty dialed in, you know, like they're able to, you know, basically test that and observe and learn from that much faster than, for example, an American robotic company that doesn't have the capacity to innovate at that pace. And so, you know, while the American company might be on their third prototype, the Chinese company is on their 12th prototype. And so you can imagine, well, which prototype is going to be better? Obviously, the one that's been able to fail 11 times before, you know, failures doesn't mean that it's not working. It just means that you need to refine that and you need to get to the next level. But that's why we see China dominating in robotics, for example. A big part of that is their ability to fail faster.
Absolutely. Let me give out your YouTube channel as we're approaching the end of this interview. Cyrus Jansen is the name, everybody. J-A-N-S-S-E-N. You can find him on YouTube. He's also got a Substack. It's pretty easy to search for his name because it's unique. Cyrus Jansen. Be sure to follow him on both of those platforms. And Cyrus, of course, I welcome your videos on our platform, brighteon.com, or even brightvideos.com. We can talk after the show if you want to post any reports in the future. I definitely welcome those. In the minutes we have remaining, I want to ask you about this question, though. The China, with DeepSeek, China is really becoming the inference hub of the world. Not only has the DeepSeek API been reduced in cost so dramatically that the lighter version called Flash is now about 1/100th the cost of Anthropic Opus 4.7. So I can write vibe code for one penny on the dollar by by using Chinese inference. But then, of course, you know, I do a lot of deep study on these topics, and I looked at what's behind all of this. How can they do it so inexpensively? And you know, there's a number of mathematical innovations in the model itself, but it's also about the power grid. So the Chinese power grid, because China had this very long-term vision about building power infrastructure, understanding the importance of that to their industry and their IT industry as well. But China's power grid produces energy, terawatt hours annually. Thousands of terawatt hours annually, and more than twice the total aggregate output of the United States, at a much lower cost. So when it comes to powering data centers and powering AI innovation and the race to superintelligence, China has an advantage. They can scale power, and it's more affordable power, whereas the U.S. has hit its limit on the Eastern power grid. And it takes us 20 years to build a nuclear power plant, and on and on and on. So if you don't have a power grid, you don't have a future in this economy. Yeah. That's your thoughts on that. That'll be our last topic for today.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, I'm so happy that you brought that question up, because when we talk about the race of AI, it actually really comes down to the power grid. That's actually the number one factor here, because let's be honest, the United States and China both have incredibly smart people. They have incredible entrepreneurs. They have a lot of people that are great engineers. China has more, but you know, not to say that the United States isn't able to, you know, create and invent some amazing AI platforms. But it all comes down to the data centers. Now, there was an interesting story that I'd read, that there was a municipal golf course that was just recently purchased in Pennsylvania. I think the land value, I think basically the golf course was worth like $7 million. Somebody paid nearly $60 million for that. Why so? Well, because it was actually very close to some of these huge headquarters for tech companies that actually are, they're like, you know what? We have a massive wide open space. We're going to need to build data centers. So we have to have this piece of land. We will pay a huge premium to buy that piece of land and turn it into a future data center, because we absolutely have to have this. So that was an interesting one, right? You know, good for the golf course owner who was able to make a lot of money on just being in the right place at the right time. But the key thing here is, again, this is the forward thinking of the Chinese government. That, rewind the clocks 25 years ago. At the turn of the century, they realized that China needs to diversify its power needs. So what did China do? It went all in on solar panels, wind turbines. We're looking at hydroelectric dams.
Huge
hydro, right? We look at the Three Gorges Dam, unbelievable project, but we also have a new dam that's being built in Tibet. And upon completion, this new dam in the mountains of Tibet will be able to generate as much electricity as the entire United Kingdom annually. So that's going to be a new addition to the existing power grid. So, you know, basically whatever that number is that the United Kingdom is able to produce in 12-month span, China is now adding that basically from one region, you know,
and
based
that project dwarfs the Three Gorges Dam too, doesn't it?
It dwarfs it. It's going to be the biggest hydro dam in the world. It's going to be, and it's incredible, because it's there's only one country that could actually build that, and it's going to be China, because it's not an easy build.
Of course,
you can imagine it's in the mountains of Tibet. It's going to be logistically very hard to do that. But you know, kind of going back to the infrastructure and things like that, there's another. You probably remember the Key Scott Bridge in Baltimore.
Scott Key, yeah, right.
So, yeah, Francis Scott Key. Thank you. I got them mixed up. That bridge that collapsed in Baltimore 2.5 years ago. We're looking at it. Here we are 2.5 years later. Where's the bridge at?
Exactly.
Has it been built?
Where's the freaking bridge?
But basically that's now been forecasted to cost over $4 billion to complete. They're nowhere near to even having a bridge. They're still working on basically the infrastructure and the bottom of the bridge, you know, basically the support systems underneath the water. That's where they're at right now. In that same time span, you know, from when the bridge collapsed until right now, China has built a brand new, the world's tallest bridge in the world. It's actually in Guizhou. It is up in the mountains. It's an incredibly hard bridge to build. They did it for about $500 million, completed it on time, under budget. It's opened up to a huge fanfare. I'm excited. I'm actually going to probably be traveling there this summer to make a video about that bridge kind of explore that. So make sure that I'll send you a link when we get that project done. But I'm probably going to be going there at the end of May to be filming some content there because it's remarkable, you know, what they've been able to do. And then instantly it's become a very popular spot on social media. There's like, I think it's like the world's highest coffee shop in the world. So they put a coffee shop right at the top where you can go have a a latte and enjoy this incredible view of the world's largest bridge. And then now, the incredible views of the canyons and the sprawling landscape that is there. Wow. But again, this is kind of a huge commitment to what China is able to do.
Yeah,
but again,
we got to wrap it up here, Cyrus.
Last thing here is, if you look at a graph, okay, United States power the last 25 years is stagnant. China's is skyrocketing because of that investment in renewable energy.
Yeah, that is so true. And very few Americans realize that China is so heavy into solar, wind, and hydro. They think it's all coal, but it's not. Coal is part of it, but it's very diverse. So, Cyrus, xixie ni. I really appreciate you joining me today. This has been a fascinating conversation. I hope it's the first of many. And I'll give out your YouTube channel yet again. Just folks, if you go to YouTube, just search for Cyrus Janssen, Janssen. And thank you so much, Cyrus. It's great to have you here today. It's nice to meet you for the first time. I look forward to speaking with you again.
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you so much. Appreciate
you. All right. You too. Take care now. All right. There you go, everybody. Cyrus Janssen. Wow. What an extraordinary person who's going to be bringing us some amazing videos, I think, coming up. So watch for that. And if you missed part one of this interview, you can find it at brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and thank you for watching here today. Take care.
Stock up on the long-term storable Ranger Bucket Set. 536 servings of clean organic superfoods for your survival pantry. Certified organic and lab tested for purity. Order now at healthrangerstore.com.